way, he took the 12 to one side and said to them, "Now we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man is about to be handed over to the chief priests and scribes. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the pagans to be mocked and scourged and crucified. And on the third day, he will rise again." Then came the mother of Zebedee's sons with her sons to make a request of Jesus. And she bowed low. And Jesus said to her, "What is it that you want?" She said to him, "Promise that these two sons of mine may one sit at your right hand and the other at your left in your kingdom." "You do not know what you are asking," said Jesus. "Can you drink the cup that I am going to drink?" They replied, "We can." "Very well," he said, "you shall drink my cup. But as for seats at my right hand and my left, these are not mine to grant. They belong to those to whom they have been allotted by my Father." When the other 10 heard this, they were indignant with the two brothers. But Jesus called them to him and said, "You know that among the pagans the rulers lord it over them, and their great men make their authority felt. This is not to happen among you. Now, if anyone wants to be great among you, must be your servant. And anyone who wants to be first among you, must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." This is the Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
When Jesus first appeared in the Holy Land, it was a fallen country. It didn't look like God's country. And it certainly didn't look like the kingdom which he said was coming. It had a tin pot king. It wasn't even a proper Jew. An Aramean time server. A little tin pot court full of venal time serving army officers and placemen and crooks who were there to do the will of a small town tyrant. And everywhere the uniforms and the influence of the Roman army were in evidence. And the great institutions of Jewish history remained dimly visible by an act of grace on the part of the Romans. And the peace was insecure, and the land felt raped and dishonored. And all of this was kept at a low temperature by a coalition of the Roman prefect and the Galilean Tetrarch and the silent collusion of the chief priests. And when Jesus arrived announcing a kingdom, many people must surely have smiled cynically. An idealistic carpenter rabbi with a little gaggle of fishermen talking about King David, what a joke. And we know that this is true because the response continues and actually grows up to the moment when Jesus dies. Remember how he dies, wearing a joke crown with "This is the King of the Jews," written up as the only charge. And in the Gospel we're reading, and the last moment comes comes to him. He suddenly cries out to God, asking why he's been forsaken. And then a great wordless cry and his last breath. And a Roman centurion who's been sent to make sure the execution proceeds to its end plants his spear on the ground and says, "That was the Son of God." Jesus' big talk, all brought to an end and punished, as you might say, in a way that it deserved. When we look back at the Gospel, we always interpret parts of the Gospel by that final act, the story of the cross. And we can do that with special force today. Matthew is a little kinder than Mark. He softens Mark's harshness. In Mark, the two boys come themselves and ask for places of honor, thrones, they say, on your right hand and your left hand, when you come into your glory. And we know that Jesus' glory in Mark's Gospel is always the cross. And here, Matthew takes the pressure off James and John by making their mum, who comes and asks for her boys to be lieutenants when the times change and things come good. I always remember that James and John were lifted from Zebedee's boat, leaving him, as the Gospel says, with the men he employed. So there's something a bit ambitious about this family, and who knows what's in the mind of Zebedee's wife as she tries to secure plum jobs for the boys. Jesus then turns directly to them and says, "You don't know what you're asking. Can you drink the cup?" We know there were the cups of the year again in the agony in the garden. And Jesus prays that the cup may pass away without him drinking it, if it be possible. And so he's really asking them now whether they can accompany him through his agony and to the ultimate fate that awaits him. And they say yes. But we know that Peter, James and John were specially taken by Jesus away from the other disciples in the garden, and that all three fall asleep and leave him alone to face his death. Jesus promises them all that they will one day share his cup. Just as in John's Gospel, he says of Peter that he can't follow him now, but he will follow him in time to come. But as the seats at my right hand and my left, they are not mine to grant. They belong to those to whom they have been allotted by my Father. The phrase "on the right hand and on the left" will next occur in this Gospel at the crucifixion itself, when Matthew will say, "They crucified with him two robbers, one to his right hand and the other to his left." And the robbers will abuse him and call down curses on him as he dies. Both of them, there's no good thief in this Gospel. And so these places, to his right hand and his left, which are allotted by the Father, are given to a pair of criminals, a pair of robbers, and James and John, for all their good intention, will be nowhere. And that is because none of them knows what they are asking. It will be a complete scene of irony when the cross comes, with the king crowned in the center, giving up the ghost, and his courtiers to right and to left, the scum of the earth, no one else will be allowed to take their place from them, because Jesus will die among sinners and for sinners. And that is something these innocent apostles to be do not yet understand. And so the other ten fall out with the two brothers. But Jesus calls them to him. How often that happens in gospel. There's a row going on or an argument. And Jesus calls them to himself. And they come to him. And we know that he's going to say something very important. Among the pagans, like the Romans, for instance, their rulers lord it over them. Their great men make their authority felt. This is not to happen among you. And immediately we see the crown of thorns for what it is. It isn't the Romans who are cynically mocking the claim of the kingdom. It is Jesus himself who is wearing a joker crown and dying in it in order to rubbish the claims of earthly monarchy. If anyone wants to be great among you, you must be your servant. Whoever wants to be first among you must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man came not to be served but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. The death of earthly ambition is absolutely real, and it is proposed to us today if we want to be a follower of Christ. And the cup and the crown which await him have to be ours as well.
Yeah, praise.